time to cast off on a new adventure. This is Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Good morning and welcome to Real Adventures from wherever you are listening right around the country. Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood joining you this morning to talk all things fishing, boating and the great outdoors. And whilst we're talking of the great outdoors, Redmond, we've had a hell of a week.
It's probably my most... Probably the show that I've looked forward to most doing, I reckon, since you and I have been together, because we've gallivanted around the state for the multiple years chasing the elusive barrel bluefin tuna, which we are going to get into soon, or you might even decide to get in off the top of the show, because it's second on the list,
but we'll hold it.
We're going to hold it, we're going to hold it. Yeah. But we had a fantastic week this week, didn't we? And
there's been some incredible captures as metropolitan Melbourne opens up. It opens this morning. I dare say if you go to a local boat ramp, Aaron, you're better off driving down Punt Road after an AFL game because it'll be less traffic.
Well, during the week, you and I launched at Queenscliff, and I'm pretty sure you've had to park the car at Bowen Heads. I think you stated.
I did.
That was without the opening. So
you said to me, "Where'd you park the car?" I said, "Just go home.
Just pick up Bowen Heads."
We launched to Queenscliff. We're just going to come back in through Bowen Heads. We'll be fine.
Well, it's a great thing. It is a great thing to see. We've been locked down for a hell of a long time. I think it's world's longest lockdown, to be exact, Patrick. But it's great to see that Metro has now rejoined with us regional crew and guys can get out and chase whatever they'd like to chase right around the whole state.
We can. Now, before we get into a bit of fishing, a bit of news around the marine space, Yanmar has been trialling real on-world water hydrogen refueling. Now, I know you're all over this.
Oh, mate, I'm all over this. I've read this article four times, and I still don't even know what the hell it's on about. It doesn't even make sense.
Yeah. You did say to me, oh, it's water.
It's cold water?
I said, well, there's been a few issues throughout history where hydrogen hasn't exactly been the safest of tech, but it's on the back of what we continue to talk about, electric motors and how this continues to evolve in the marine space. Now, quite clearly, the marine space is behind the motoring industry to a certain extent. Like we've seen Minn Kota, we've seen Garmin and a few others right around. The difference being that's a far smaller electric outboard. And what we're talking about here is 400 horses, Redmond.
We are, and something to do with electricity sent to a bank of batteries that turns power to... Oh, I've got no idea. I'm trying to do my best today, Patrick, but we'll go back into the fishing talk and I'll come back in then, I reckon.
This tech has been worked in with Toyota, they're obviously the motoring company, and it's really interesting to see. It's on the Boat Sales website at the moment, and it just shows how the marine industry is investing serious dollars in this technology, and it'll be interesting to see over the next few years where it goes, and
can't wait to talk about it again.
Suzuki Jimny, Redmond. Now, it's one of Australia's most popular cars, and in actual fact, throughout the pandemic, it's gone up. Secondhand cars have been more expensive than brand new cars. But we love cars in Australia. We love getting off-road. And at this stage, there's no real direct competitors for it. Now, you're not going to tow your Northbank 750 with it, but it's a great little off-road to take it down the beach. You've obviously spent a bit of time in Beachport Road.
I've got a friend who has one of these.
Likes it?
Sammy Walker, he's a good friend of mine. He likes it. I'd be more worried that the wind's going to blow it over because, no joke, three of us can lift the back of it up. Like, we can actually lift this thing up.
That's why it's perfect for beach driving.
What, so you hit a crab and you get rolled over?
No. If you get bogged, you can lift and then move.
We're going real well to this morning, I think.
There's a 54-hour rescue.
Yes, there was during the week. That's more of mine.
400 nautical miles earns New South Wales Police Marine Area Command serious commendation. It was quite extraordinary to see. 54 hours.
Yeah, west of Lord Howe Island. It's where the Mayday call was made. And
that's a big trip.
And, yeah, it's credit to all the workers that were involved because they ended up with an award from the safety watchdog, which is tremendous because... That is. I'm just putting it into perspective on what we do on the water. Like, it's one of those things that, like, it's
400 nautical miles just offshore.
You can't even... And, yeah, to the crew was becoming fatigued and running low on food and water as well. So, yeah, great effort to everyone that was involved in that search and rescue because...
Right around the country, the police and marine rescue, border patrol, they do an incredible job because they deal with some of the worst conditions you could possibly imagine.
Yep, they do. And that's why we need to be smarter when we use our vessels. And I've put myself at risk a few times, I'll be honest with you, Pat, but you never think of... the actual people that are going to be involved into actually helping you. So you've got, I've got a
few. That have to risk their lives because that's the stuff you've done something stupid or whatever it might be.
Yeah, you're spot on. And that's, I've got a few good friends in the water police and they've often said, oh, this idiot was out there the other day. He shouldn't have been out. He goes, then we've got to go look for him. And we're getting smashed with water. We're looking over the side and the divers have got to go in and like things like that. Like just, so if you are heading out, don't just think of yourself. And if you're in your comfort zone and something miraculous, something happens that is an accident, pure accident, it is what it is. But when you can try and avoid that situation, let's try and avoid it because it's like I said, putting your mates at some people, family and friends at risk is no good.
Let's head over to the west. The demersal ban, there's a 2-month closure as we speak. Well, 15th of October, it kicks off, Redmond. Talk us through the details.
Yeah, so that's down from... I've got it in front of me here because I actually haven't been fortunate enough to chase the jewfish in WA, Patrick.
Barugia?
So, north of Kalberi to the east of Augusta. Yep. So that you cannot target demersal fish, and that's for the conservation of the fishery in itself. So just do the right thing. If you do catch a demersal fish, for example, snapper, jewfish like I just spoke about, and everything else that's on that list, make sure that you do sink the fish down properly. So there's special weights and whatnot designed to actually help reset, I guess, the fish's swim bladder in the fish itself. So make sure if you do catch one, buy those appropriate sinker weights and follow the regulations that's in play to save this fishery.
They're incredible, the work that Fisheries WA do and how progressive I think they've been from the management of the rock lobster. What do we call them here in Victoria?
Crayfish
industry. You know, like they really are one step ahead of the game. The last thing that anyone wants is you get to a stage, like we've seen for our great mates in SA, where there's a 3-year snapper ban, and it just hammers your commercial fish eyes.
And the economy.
And they've been part of the problem, as we all have, but there needed to be greater accountability. And then for the recos and those local towns just getting smashed because of it. So
the charter boat Western guys Australia is probably one of the biggest hits.
Well, exactly. Like, that's what I mean by commercial.
Yeah. So the charter boat guys, like they're just being, that's literally like you being told, you cannot play football for the next, I don't know how long you got left.
10 years.
We'll go 3 years. we don't want to see you get down that path. So do the right thing in WA. Now, Patrick, I'm going to cut it short on the news because that was...
You're excited.
That was your news for the week. This is my news for the week. You landed this week. We'll go through the plan of attack.
Well, the boat landed.
The boat landed. But I'm going to go through the plan of attack. You wanted to head out for a fish in the new North Bank, 7:50, and you and I just had a sneaky session after we picked it up.
A couple of hours. We weren't there very long.
Got a half. Well, we got 3 or 4 nice snapper, and then you said to me next week, I want to go fishing. And I said, what do you want to fish for? And you basically said everything. So I picked the boat up the night before, took it to my joint.
40 rods in the boat.
I didn't realise that you're bringing all your rods too. So I've literally packed this whole boat with everything, you name it, you could possibly chase. And the plan of attack was a tie change for snapper. And we went out, we anchored up for snapper. And this was around that 9 o'clock sort of stage. You were a little bit late in the morning, I won't lie. And
it was all part of the greater plan.
Great plan. And as Patrick is, he's like a kid in a candy shop. One thing to the next. He can't sit still. What do you reckon? We go to a barrel. And I had a few phone calls coming in here and there. The barrels are starting to bite. They've shown up. We've got good life. We've got good this. And I'm like, all right, well, do you want to do it or not? And you go, yeah. And then I think your dad or Nigel Lappin said to us, what are the chances of getting a fish? And I said, no, you're not going to catch one.
You did say
I said, you won't catch one.
Very, very. No, you didn't say it. You said very, very
Very unlikely. And about 40 minutes after that, I reckon I went from minus 100%. And in the video that we took, I said over 100% confident we're going to hook a fish. Everything just felt like formed in front of us. It was as good as you could ever see. We had multiple whales feeding, coming, like you saw some tremendous stuff.
It was incredible to see.
Like it just coming out, eating bait fish. And what I believe happens is those whales come through, They eat those bait fish, and it'd be like you spinning around in circles 15 times saying, well, where am I?
You get stunned.
You get stunned, and that's fish get stunned from these whales and the barrels feed. So we're trying to work in with the whales and the sea life that's on offer. So you've got seals, you've got dolphins round up bait balls, and you've got the like. So
I thought David Attenborough was going to pop around in another boat.
It was as good as you could get it.
It was incredible, the sea life. And to have fish like this so close to home, so close to the shore, you come out of Port Phillip Bay Heads, and we're only talking a few kilometres from the heads of Port Phillip Bay, and all of a sudden, onto fish.
And the amount of fish that I marked up in the area, so it's all good to have the life there. You've got to have the fish there to catch them. There's no good to wait. The whales will eat the food all day, but if there's no tuna there, you're not going to catch one. Yep. So you've got to rely on things like your sonar and your everything. Like I always say, some things I don't spend money on and some things I do.
I was about to say, is this where it comes back to? If you've had your boat for a while and your sounder's 10, 15 years old, it's time to upgrade, because there's four transducers on the 750. So we can basically
If we hadn't hooked one up in the first half an hour, fried. I would have fried it. I would have turned the other three on and zapped it all. We're running your 175 high wide. That's what we were running with your Garmin. I think you got a 16-inch screen in it, and that's what we're running. And when I started marking these fish up, and you know they're barrels, you just do. And I've looked at you, I've gone, we're going to catch a fish here. I got pretty excited.
Well, you know they're barrels.
Yep.
But even I can tell that they're barrels. Yeah. I don't fish anywhere near as much as you, because you can see the bait fish
on the
screen, and then you can see these upside down ewes that are sizable. They're the size of these bait schools, you know, just below it. To the side of it. So it's quite clear what they are.
And you don't traditionally mark up. You do mark up dolphins here and there. You can mark up anything on a sounder, anything. But the dolphins, you don't tend to ever mark. You know when they're barrels. You just know.
We had hundreds of dolphins and it didn't mark up.
No, so we'd be all by ourselves with just dolphins just swimming around the boat, blah, blah, blah. We just don't. You mark the odd little thing up, but nothing in particular. These barrels, righto, Pat, they are here. We started with multiple techniques. We ended up going into the pilchard side of things, dropping the pillies down, which I reckon I had one grab.
Yeah,
I doubt a seal and a dolphin don't tend to take dead pillies often. If it's live, the seals bang straight into it.
But so we're talking about we got into a position where the bait is right at the back of the boat,
trying to protect itself under the hull.
Under the hull, yeah. And there is just life everywhere. So Aaron's ploy was we'll drop an unweighted pilly.
Yep.
Down and it'll take off, and it went at one point, but then we did struggle again to get the bait together. It spread out a bit.
Yeah, and as soon as it started, that's what I said to you. I said, boy, there was a patch that one started to fizzle a bit, and there was a patch out further, and I said to you, I remember saying to you, I said, let's just leave this, let it recuperate, let's see if it comes back together, and we'll go to the next one. And there was one, and your dad actually said, there's another whale out there. So we went out there, and then I marked these fish up, and I said to you, I remember looking and going, Pat, they're moving. We can't get a pilly into this. They're actually moving. They're moving the bait. Like the bait's not, it's balled up, but it's moving. Impossible to pilly. You can't do it. You're moving too far. So I said, we'll lure it. We marked up fish. We had them coming up and bang, we hooked up. Then we had a terminal tackle error go on. I don't know what's happened, when I've crimped it, I might have maybe hit the line, or even with the life, it could have touched a whale, a dolphin, a seal. It could have even just been, you just don't know. It wasn't anything.
The defect in the mono.
I was pretty spewing on that because, to be honest with you, it was probably one of the fish that I've lost that hurt probably the most, because I know that people will say, oh, Dangerfield jumps on with you and just catches a barrel. But no, you don't. You've actually done more than half a dozen trips. You've actually worked hard to get this fish. We're out the front of our place. We're in our home ground. And to lose a fish like that from a terminal area, it hurts. It really, really gets under your skin. I'd rather lose it from pulling a hook. Pull a hook, I don't care. Because you can't do anything about it.
Yeah, it's one of
those. But it just, terminal tackle is one of those things that shouldn't happen. It's my fault. Shouldn't happen. So
after experiencing bringing that fish in, I'm glad it happened, because that was on the 30 wide.
It was on the 30.
So that was on the 30. So the gear that we're using, Tiagra 30 wide to Tiagra 50 wide. Now, the 50 wide, obviously, as it sounds, it's a bigger version of the 30 wide.
Yeah.
And I could never totally get it in my head. I've caught some great fish over my time with you. We've caught some huge sharks, sailfish, you name it. We've caught some great fish, some incredible GTs up north. But this thing, I now I get why you need the gear that you need. Why, and we're going to talk about this in our Reds review a little later.
Yeah, we've got a good review.
Around harness equipment. It will pull fault in any of any weakness that you have in any equipment. And that was so true. And you don't get it until you experience being on the boat and just how much weight and power these things have.
Well, we hooked the next fish. We just followed the whales. And we're marking fish near the whales and we're trying to follow them and in that area, I should say. And we hooked up and your dad goes, I think we're on. Oh, blue mum. I was like, what, you reckon, John? Oh, that was a great comment. But anyway, we fought this fish for just shy of an hour. In the end, it was about 45 minutes I worked out. You did very well. You did really well on the rod. Obviously, driving, you got to get in the right positions as well. I led the fish up. I literally led the fish up, and then Nige come across with the gaff. So it was one of those things that everything went to plan, sort of.
You're listening to Real Adventures. We're going to talk about driving and chasing these tuna after the break. Plenty more Real Adventures coming up.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. We're talking about our week in fishing, which culminated in 130-odd kilo bluefin tuna caught just outside of Port Phillip Bay Heads in Victoria. Redmond, one of the real keys to fighting fish as big as this is having someone on the helm that really knows what they're doing, understands how to drive a boat and how to tire out the fish and not the angler. That was really clear to me that you made it a hell of a lot easier for me because I'd just got my cast off my hand the day before.
Was there any comments from the doctor? Was there comments any doctors after you sent a video?
I didn't send it to the surgeon, but hand recovered well. Talk us through, like, obviously this is something that you've learned over a long period of time.
Yep.
But this is a really integral part to chasing giant bluefin and making it easier on the angler to actually get, you know, yourself into a position where you can land these fish.
Yeah, you are right. And the number one key is keep the line tight.
Yeah.
Now, and that's basically the person on the rod's job. I'd say probably 70% of the time, maybe a little bit more.
But we're moving. So we've hooked up on this fish.
Yep.
And as soon as we've done that, we've cleared the deck. So we had three other rods out. We've brought all those in. And then you're on the wheel and you're positioning me at the back of the boat on the same side of the boat.
As driver, yep.
So the fish was always in front of me. So it was easy for me, but it obviously takes some skill to do.
And one comment that you guys made, Nige actually, I sort of made a bit of a joke, and I said to Nige, Nigel said, he goes, I thought it would be more chaotic than that, this and that, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, you're actually really calm. I'm like, well, if you start panicking, that's when shit goes really wrong quickly.
Yeah.
Like real quick. And I just kept it pretty cool. And when we got set up, we got into position, you got your harness on, we got you kitted out. And what was the first thing I said to you? Are you comfy?
Yeah.
I said, are you comfy? And you're like, yeah, I really am. So we're going to do a review on the harness, so we won't go into that. But then it was about the boat position. Now, you can't just have these. We had a very calm day. And to tell you the truth, it was an absolute pleasure to drive in, especially in this boat that you've got. But it's an absolute pleasure to drive in calm conditions. Because what do I do most of the time chasing barrels? I'm avoiding boats, I'm avoiding traffic, and fish feed like mad in rough weather. So I'm usually in rough, and I'm copping it at the helm, I'm back and forward.
Well, that's one of the things that we copped that early on when we first went out, and there was fish everywhere, but there was too many people that literally, the fish come up, and the school comes up, and they drive smack bang through it. And not once did you drive through it. You always look to angle around.
Pull the lures through.
So you're not scaring the crap out of the bait fish and then sending everything down deep. You pull around, so the lures will come through it, but the boat isn't ramming through the...
Yeah, you perfectly, and that's what we did. We got away from the boats. That was the number one rule as well. Get away. Let's get away. Let's get away. And you made that call, and we just worked the bait. We just worked around the edges of the bait. The fish aren't always smack bang under it. They'll be around it, and they were. But it was more about, like I said, the boat. It's about those fish. The quicker... Like a lot of people... Like I saw on the post yesterday, fish were fought for 4 hours, 5 hours. And I'll never have a dig at anyone because I've had fish do that to me as well. Often when it's rougher and it's hard to drive.
Yep.
But in the calm conditions, to knock it over in 40 minutes, 45 minutes, it was just all I was constantly doing was trying to get this fish to come up. And so many times I said to you, do you feel like it's coming up? Is it coming up? And I'm trying to pull it with the boat faster, slower. But back to what I was saying about the tension, There's a times where that fish is so quick. They swim 70 kilometers an hour. They're fast as hell.
Yep.
They change direction. That's when I've got to be instant on that throttle and accelerate, because you physically can't wind that fast.
Nah.
The bow in the line happens, and I'm just driving away from the fish as quick as I can to get that tension. As soon as the tension comes back, naturally you'll be at the back corner. Then I'll right hand down, swing it again, and I'll get you back in that position again. So it's about getting you comfortable and tight to that fish for the whole time, as well as trying to plane the fish up. Just constantly trying to plane it up, trying to pull it up the whole time.
So for those that are heading out chasing them this weekend, right around the country, but particularly those that have been locked down in Metro Melbourne.
Yep.
There's going to be a lot of boats out.
Yeah, bit windy today. Saturday is pretty blowy. Tomorrow's the day there'll be a few more boats out. There will definitely be boats out.
But it's not just sticking to, oh, we're just going to follow every other boat. Because your chances are you're going to spend, you might have a great day and you know, sink a few on the boat, terrific. A
couple of jammos.
But you're not going to catch too many fish. You've actually got to
be
willing to explore.
The way I look at it, there's 100 boats in an area. There's a school of fish. You're the first boat there, you've got the best chance of hooking one. Second boat there, probably the second best. Eighth boat there, all of a sudden, you're at the 50th in the list.
Yep.
The chances go down. I always, and this pays off a lot of the time, but don't get me wrong, I have bad days too. I always try and get away from boats. You know, I've always said it. Let's get away from boats. You and I both said, you said, oh, are you happy to go for a look? I'm like, oh, I'm leaving. I actually said, I'm leaving this bait ball. We had a bait ball. I marked up 3 or 4 fish
on
it.
It's stressful when there's bloody boats everywhere.
But you're not enjoying it. But naturally, you're going, oh, what's this idiot doing? Why is he doing this? Why? And I got one of the guys that was on the bait ball. I don't know. He was trawling, I reckon, at 5 kilometres an hour. He was going so slow, but he was trawling lures. I could see him. I don't know if he was trying to sit at 5 kilometres where it should be at 5 knots. I don't know if the mistake.
And, mixed up.
Yeah, and then there was another guy that started to come in. I just said, no, I can't do it. And that was only 2 boats. So yeah. I said, righto, Pat. Let alone 50. So if you are out this weekend and you, don't get me wrong, go to where the fish are. Start there and then have the balls to go, righto, I'm going to push away from this and I'm going to literally go looking elsewhere. And you just got to have your eyes open. Like, hell, I think I saw those birds. I think I said to you, I reckon there's birds in the distance.
It started with 2.
Yeah, 2 or 3 turns and then just got bigger. And then I said, oh, there's martin birds. And I'm pretty sure that was Wally. So,
and then we saw this giant whale just like that. That in itself is incredible to see. So good luck if you're heading out this weekend. Stay safe. And the other thing is, obviously, respect those around you.
Yeah, 100%. Yep.
You know, you've got to be careful.
Especially if a guy's on a fish.
Yep.
Get out of the way. Yep. If a guy hooks up, just get out of the way.
And that isn't 40 metres behind him in the boat, there could be hundreds of metres of line out. So,
literally,
give him a wipe.
Well, that first run that you're on your fish, it dumped a lot of line. I don't know if you realise, I've got no idea.
Yeah, I felt it, mate.
Yeah, 200. And just one more important thing we'll say before we get into the whip around. Just communication between the angler and the driver and the person on deck.
Yeah,
excuse me, in a way.
It is, and that's why the boat catches the fish.
Oh, 100%. Like, Nige gaffed the fish. Your dad had the camera. I was driving. You were on the rod. I have not physically bought one in myself for, it'd have to be 6-plus years now.
Yeah.
And I just don't have a lot of interest in it. It hurts.
Yeah.
And especially in, especially in the rough conditions, it hurts even more. You got bloody palace out there. But yeah, communication. If you're in a big boat like Pat's, I highly recommend VHFs on each end or a headpiece because felt like you were 19 metres away from me at times. But nah, communication, just constant talking. Pat, you're right. You're comfy. You're doing water. At one stage, I turn around and you're the only bloke I know fighting a barrel eating potato chips and lollies, I think it was, maybe even chocolate.
I needed a refuel.
Oh, God. But no, it was a great fun. Great to land that fish. It was good.
Let's have a look in what's biting right around the country. We start in Tassie, fishing off the rocks at the moment with pillies. There's been a few salmon that have been caught in good numbers. Redmond, the Mersey River has been really good for browns this week. And the fish haven't been too fussy. They've been hitting soft plastics and different types of hard-bodied divers as well. So that always makes it easier when they're not too fussy and they're happy to have a go at most fish. Heading to WA.
Some kingfish are being caught out of Perth. When I say some, there's good numbers. You just got to find the school. When you find the school, you're going to get them. You can micro-jig and also squid strips will work really well too. Point Sampson's fishing very good. The demersal ban's in, Pat. So the demersal ban is in play. So Red Emperor is a great option. You've got other reef species too. Red Emperor, everyone loves eating fish, blah, blah, blah. Get out there and get them.
South Australia, Port Nullunga Jetty's providing plenty.
Oh, go again? Port
Noarlunga.
That's a very good pronunciation. I was hoping you read this one.
Mate, I'm in South Australia. I spent 8 years in South Australia. Providing plenty of calamari at the moment. The Cepheid jig's working best. Once again, it's about the weight of those jigs. Isn't
yeah, 100%.
It's one of the things that you're better off spending a bit more on a jig. It's not your, your $2 Kmart special. Invest in that and you'll be rewarded. Hardwick Bay fishing really well for whiting, pippies and squid doing the damage at the moment.
Yeah, Corwell as well, pretty much exactly the same for your whiting too, Pat. Consistent captures with a few calamari mixed in too. Over at Port Hacking in New South Wales, those kingfish we spoke about last week, they're in bigger numbers again.
Some good sized fish.
Yeah, 70 to 80 centimetres. So over some legals, but one thing is, I don't know if we're allowed to promote drug use on here, but I'll tell you what, these kingfish, I've been told they are literally like they're on steroids. They are literally pulling people's arms off for the size of them.
I was worried where you were going.
All these steroids of these fish, I tell you what, the kingfish pull hard, but they reckon for some reason they're just going even harder. So I don't know if that's possible for kingfish, but that's the reports I'm getting.
Great fun on the lighter gear as well.
Oh, they are.
If you're interested in, like, up, you know, try 5,000, you know, pull it back a bit, you know, and that'll give you a, you know,
adrenaline
work
rush.
Work for your money.
We should have done that with your barrel. Actually, during the barrel during the week, no. I think you actually were going to cast something out with a 5,000 stella.
I did.
Well, that would have lasted 5 seconds. Port Stephens having a great run. Big flathead to that magic 1 meter mark at times with lures and soft plastics. Just that sort of traditional method. Get that heavy jig head, Pat, and that'll hit the bottom and really get that sand going.
There's some small bluefin out wide of Naruma as well, Redmond. There's a few that have been chasing them. The small skirts working the best, and clearly, Redmond, that's a case of matching the hatch.
So 100%.
That smaller...
And that's what we did on the barrel during the week, didn't we? I always talk about it. We realised there were small pilchards in the water, so we dropped our lure size. I actually only had one on me, and you had one that I pinched off you as well to keep at home, something to imitate those pillies. So we dropped down to the 8-inch, which still was probably bigger than the bait. The bait would have been 5-inch, but we matched that hatch to the pilchards. And funny enough, with our two fish that we hook, we're both on that same colour. So it's pretty simple. Match the hatch, you'll get some fish. And last report... coming in from Queensland, Gladstone's fishing very, very good this week. Red Emperor on the chew, as well as plenty of coral trout. And if they're around, I'm tipping you'll be on the chew too, because you'll be like eating them.
And don't forget, if you're fishing in the NT, the Million Dollar Barra is happening at the moment. We'd love to see some photos for you.
I'd love the million dollars.
If you can just send them in. And there's plenty of $10,000 barras out there to be caught as well. And that's the whip around for what's happening right around the country. Let's get to the social club now. It's going to be a pretty short one today, Redmond, because we've tuned into a bit of time with how excited we've been about talking about the big southern bluefin we caught during the week. But, of course, the social club, we love taking your questions from social media. Send us a direct message into our socials. It's as simple as that, whether it be Facebook, Instagram, or download our Real Adventures app. It's as good as it gets. First question,
First question is from Troy. Great work, boys, on the barrel during the week. I've always wanted to land one. And Danger, I'd love to know how you actually felt on the rod. Silly question, but was it hard to bring in?
Well, we spoke about this on the top of the show, Redmond. If you've got someone that really knows what they're doing with steering the boat, Aaron kept me in the best position to fight the fish the entire time. That makes a huge difference. We're not just knocking the boat out of gear and then it's good luck to the angler and the fish is taking hundreds of metres away. We're chasing in the boat. We're constantly keeping that line tight. I'll be totally honest with you. The reason I caught the fish as quick as I did and the reason I caught it in the first place is because of Aaron's boat skills. So it really does pay.
Doesn't often say nice things about me, so I'll take this one.
It really does pay, to have someone that really understands what they're doing sitting in the helm.
And if you are learning, just everything we're saying, just don't complicate it, relax, and just the fish does everything. Just let the fish do its thing, let it settle into the fight, and then arrange yourself from there.
Next question is from Mitch. Red, is there a way you can explain the cleaning process of the big tuna that you landed, please?
I reckon it's relevant for the barrel show, so I'll accept this question.
Well, this is quite funny because Aaron bought out a machete, the thing was that big.
I got actually doubted pretty hard on my cleaning skills, started from even getting it out of the boat. We can't lift this. We got it out.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about it. Something that helped in the next question from Riley. We can talk about dive doors, but cleaning process, where does it start? Now,
It starts on an $80 Bunnings cleaning table. That's where it starts.
No, well, it starts even before then, because one of the things that you did as soon as the boat, as the fish got on the boat, you bled it straight away, and that's critical for a few reasons.
It makes a massive difference. You got to get the blood out of the fish. If you don't get the blood out, it's not going to not eat nice. Get the blood out. And they bleed. I think you said to me, oh, we'll get photos, this and that. I said, no, but I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to bleed. The heart's still, so the heart's an involuntary muscle, so the heart will always... like, for example, just for me, so I've had a heart transplant. Even though if you're brain damaged, the heart still goes. So same as a tuna when it dies. Sorry about that. But it was a good example. So the heart can stay alive for a period of time. It keeps pumping. So why it's alive and it can pump blood through the body, you're best to get the knife, cut it right on its lateral line, basically. There's an artery that sits there, and the blood just pumps out, and it bleeds like mad. The boat's covered.
And this is the best way to preserve a fish. Now, it's one thing to go out fishing for a fish like this. It's another thing, if you're going to keep it, to really respect the fish by treating it the right way so you can use and eat as pretty much every part of the fish. So this enables you to do that. So Aaron did that, and then it was on ice, and then we took it back to your place to then get filleted.
Oh, you wouldn't let me do it at your place.
No, definitely not. I don't know how Kari puts up with you. And then that's where the real fun began.
It does. And what we do, we get out of the boat, we get onto my $80 Bunnings table that everyone doubted, and I honestly use a small knife.
Is that really from Bunnings?
$89 from Bunnings.
That is amazing.
And it's cleaned 50,000 whiting, 444,000 flooded, and multiple barrels.
It had 135 kilos on it, and it still survived it.
It survived it. It's... Bunnings, a one-stop shop. It's basically...
Are you on their payroll? You should be.
Kari, my partner, works there, so I've got to keep... That's the only way to get a pay rise for it. So what I do, it comes into then a thing called quartering. So the fish goes up, and I don't run a big knife. I have a long 7-inch knife. You can even run a 9-inch. And I run either side of the blood line. So that lateral line that I just spoke about runs down the middle of the fish. So from the pectoral fin, metal right down to the tail, either side of it, and narrows down as you get close to the tail. Now, it's got a sinew that runs on either side of that lateral line. You want to just miss it. You want to come, I guess, to you, because you're always on the top quarter. You always got the fish, I guess, facing you that you're doing it, the big side when you're quartering it. So you want to be on the side of, of yourself on the fish and stay this side of the sinew, because the sinew is what keeps the meat attached. And then what you do on the actual top quarter, so on the side of it running along, I guess, the top fins, along, run your knife just only an inch in, literally all the way down. I grabbed John Boy, your old man, and I said, I put a hole at the end for my finger, said to John Boy, hold onto the end, and then basically the whole quarter basically just falls off. There's nothing attaching it to the actual skeleton in itself, other than the bit of cartilage around the top and that sinew. And the whole quarter basically comes off in one piece. And you're doing that times four.
Yep.
So you've got four pieces. So quartering either side, the end frame looks clean. In the middle on either side, you've got the lateral line that stays on that fish when you dispatch of it. And then your four quarters, no blood, minimal blood line in it. And then you make sure you do take the blood line out. Then it's the process of literally skinning it as well. So just, and that's as easy as running your knife down and along the skin. So that's the easiest way I can explain to it. And there's plenty of videos on Salt Guide website too, if you want to actually see how I do it in person.
Riley, we'll address your question in the flying gaff, because they both link into each other little later.
Sounds good.
In the show. That wraps up the Social Club. If you've got a question for Aaron or I, make sure you shoot it into our Real Adventures socials, and we'll do our best to answer your questions. And it's hotting up at the moment, particularly off the back of the big Southern Bluefin caught over the weekend. You're listening to Real Adventures. Plenty more coming after the break.
Gearing up for Dometic. Enjoy the great outdoors with all the comforts of home with Dometic.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. It's time for Gearing Up for Dometic. Enjoy the great outdoors with all the comforts of home with Dometic. Our special guest this morning is Brad Williams from Narrawong Holiday Park. Good morning, Brad.
Hi, how are you going?
We're going very well. Now, talk us through the holiday park, how long you've had it for. Metro Melbourne is out of lockdown, so hopefully the region's going to heat up, mate.
Yeah, looking that way. With everyone heading out, and we've had a few regional travels already, but with Melbourne out now, we're geared up and ready to go, and the fish are biting in the rivers and out in the ocean.
So talk us through, where is Narrawong? How far from sort of the...
Town of Portland.
The town of Portland, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we're 15 kilometres on the Warrnambool side of Portland. So you come through Port Fairy and 15 kilometres out that side. Well, there's nothing in Narrewong except our caravan park. Yeah. There's a school, a little fire station and a post office. But, we're on the Surrey River where the park is surrounded like a horseshoe with the river all the way around it. And a bridge over the Surrey River onto the beach for fishing as well.
Now, Brad, you've probably seen during the week, Patrick and I landed
We landed
a beautiful barrel of bluefin tuna at home down here. But I will be honest, Pat, I'll be honest. That region, that southwest region, is the home of barrel bluefin tuna. And Brad, take us through your boat, like the boat accessibility, because
it's a key part of what we do
because Pat's got a 402-metre boat now. I've got my little 6-metre North Bank. So we've got all different size boats that want to come down. Where can we stay?
Yeah, absolutely can fit you in here. We're on 15 acres down here. We've got 15 cabins. They've all got room for parking the boat right next to the cabin. And we've also got plenty of 150 grass sites, where there's big spacious sites where you can fit caravans and boats and cars on them whenever you like, especially in the quieter times when it's not summer school holidays. We can get all those vehicles on the sites very accessible. And there's a boat ramp onto the river out the front gate of our park on the Surrey there. And then, as I said before, it's just a 15-kilometre hike into town to access the boat ramps in town. And then we've got full fish clean facilities and everything like that within the park as well. A little station where you can clean up for your day's catches.
So that's pretty important what you've just said there. That fish cleaning facilities is a big one. There's a lot of parks that don't even let you clean your boat. Now, as a fisherman myself and Pat, we want to be able to come back, and if we get a feed of flatties or if we get a trout or if we get a tuna or something like that, you can cater for us to dispose of the fish too, like in the park too, because it's like we'll have a couple of beers, let's be honest, a couple of Jammos, Patrick, and a couple of Reds while we're cleaning the fish. Is that all good if we can do all that sort of stuff there?
Yeah, absolutely. The fish cleaning station's got a water and a sink and everything like that.
Yep.
It's got the bin there that we're happy for. It's lined plastic bin. We're happy to dispose of all the rubbish from the fish cleaning, and we empty that whenever needed. And we absolutely encourage it. We love to see the families come along, catch all the fish in the rivers and the ocean. And if we can get some families catching some fish, we'll clean up the rubbish for them.
We're chatting with Brad Williams from Narrewong Holiday Parks. Now, what about families, Brad? Now, Aaron and I love to spend hours on the water, but there is...
We're getting trouble here and there.
The other side as well. Let's talk through the park's facilities, playgrounds, games rooms, things like that. What else does the park offer?
Yeah, so within the park, we've got the playground and the games room, as you mentioned. Plenty of room for the kids to ride around on the bikes. Just outside our back door, there's also a footy oval with a little BMX track and another playground out there. And then also on the beach, it's patrolled in summer and Easter times. But a big family attraction is over here, the shark teeth washing up on the beach. Quite often. It's one of the only beaches or couple beaches in Australia where shark teeth regularly are found on the beach here. And people are out there looking for them in the sand, just on the edge of the water daily.
What sharks are they?
They're fossilized shark teeth mainly.
You've got Aaron really excited.
Shark teeth? I need a new necklace, Pat.
In our office, we've got about 12 shark teeth that the previous owners had all collected, just in a little frame. And then my son found a really good-sized one, actually, about 3 weeks ago, just in the river. There's something about the area where they're from an old reef out there somewhere that they all wash up over time. The sharks go to that reef to do their thing, and the teeth get knocked out, and they wash up
yearly
onto
dental
the beach
check,
here
Patrick.
At Narrewong.
Yearly dental check. They do it regularly.
Now, Brad, what about in terms of park security? So we bring our boat in. You don't exactly want people to be able to freely drive in and out of the caravan park. What sort of gates or security do you have?
We have full booms access with all individual codes. We can tell when people come in and out on what code, and their cameras are all, their boom gates are all on video camera as well. So, and there's only one entrance in and out of the park. As I said, the park is completely surrounded by river. So there's only one gate in and out, which is boom gate controlled and video surveillance.
Well, I won't be doing my insurance job there, will I, Pat?
No, you won't. All right, if you would like more information on Narrawong Holiday Park, their location, 20 Caravan Park Road, Narrawong, 3285 Victoria. You can give them a buzz on 0355295289 or send them an email at stay@narrawongholidaypark.com.au. Brad Williams, thank you for joining us this morning on Real Adventures.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate the opportunity.
That was gearing up for Dometic Mobile Living Made Easy. It's time for Red's review, the product review of the week. And it's not too often that I'll give you a sort of, I can vouch for this product. But during the week, I don't want to bring it up again, but Aaron and I went tuna fishing and I may have landed 135 kilos.
How come whenever I go tuna fishing and I get fish multiple during the years, we don't get a dedicated show to Dangerfield's 135 kilo bluefin tuna?
Well, because yours haven't exactly been as spectacular, ginormous,
okay.
You know, thanks. That sort of thing. But we're talking...
Well, good Redmond. Luck next time heading out there.
We're talking fishing harnesses, and I can vouch for this. This is a must. If you are going to comfortably fight bluefin tuna in excess of 100 kilos, this is one thing that you absolutely need to have because it makes fighting the fish 10 times easier, and you can do it really quite comfortably. You can actually, you're still holding onto the rod, but you can relax at different stages during the fight.
You can let go of the rod. Literally, you've tied into it. You can let go, and the good thing is it's got a handle on the back, so in the rough weather, you can tie yourself to the boat or have your mate hold you too, Pat, when it's rough, but They're a must on big fish. They're a must. Marlin, sharks, and bluefin tuna. So, big bluefin tuna. Now, what they do is you've got to correctly position this stuff. So, they're not cheap. It's just for a start. They're around that $380 mark. I don't know how they can justify the price on them because it's literally a bit of plastic, one of them, and a bit of material, the other. But
it is the best $380 you'll ever spend.
When you are kitting your mate up in these, you need to do it properly. Now, I said to you, I did the rough estimate on you yesterday. I've actually put it around my waist and roughly did it. And we're probably got, my abs are a bit firmer than yours, but we're probably a bit similar around the waist there. So I sort of just did a test while you were getting set in, and then I measured it. And then Nige put the gimbal around yourself. And it's up to you to position that where you feel like it's comfortable. You can't move your hands much, but you put the rod in. All right, that's good. The most important bit is the harness, Pat. The gimbal naturally sits in its place. Like I said, it naturally sits there. The rod goes in. Then the harness, which actually attaches
your hips.
Butt and hips to the rod in itself, is where the weight comes in for the whole fight. Now, what you want to do is two parts of the harness. There's one that goes around, I guess, your hips, like you said before, around your kidneys sort of thing. And that goes around your kidneys. And we're talking about the Black Magic tackle kit at harness kit here. There's multiple different ones, but this is the one that you and I used. And there's another one that goes around the bottom of your backside, around the bottom of your glutes. Now, basically, it's like sitting in a harness. When you go...
It's extremely comfortable.
It is. You're sitting in it, and it comes around the side. I didn't even strap you in. I don't know if you noticed. There's a belt buckle that goes in the front. I didn't even do that.
Didn't need it.
You don't need it. I just put the two clips on the reel and the Tiagra, and you just placed your backside into it. And you can then lean forward and back and lift the fish up comfortable. You haven't got strain holding onto the rod in your arms and the chance of actually losing the fish in itself.
We've done a little bit of a hunt around. Davostackle.com.au has got them at the moment on sale for $319.
Bargain.
Most places you go will price match. And as we said, the Black Magic Equalizer harness and gimbal set. It is a must if you're going to spend big time offshore and you want to chase one of these monster southern bluefin tuna.
And just for the guys that are, a lot of people now are turning to the spin gear. So you were going to run a 5,000 Stella yesterday, but I recommend 20,000 Stellas on a 80 to 100 pound rod. I'm using the extractor rods. And a lot of people are going to spin with Pili because it's easy to flick a spin gear, let them run, then flick it over and you're on.
Yes.
And I've caught a lot of fish this year on spin gear and dropping the Pili's in, not traditionally for trawling as such, but for even game fish like marlin and stuff, dropping liveys in, they're easier to swing on a spin rod than it is to feed a Tiagra down at times.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tiagra is much more user-friendly And I know
once that you hook up and you're rolling. Yep.
Once you get set into play, yeah, but the spin gear is quite hard. And there's actually a strap. Shimano do a little spin harness that actually cross over itself, I guess, in a figure eight sort of motion. So you go through the loop in itself. It goes around the top of the handle and you can actually hook your harness in. And it's the exact same thing. But I don't think it works as good. It still works, 100% it works, but it's nowhere near as comfortable as Tiagra 50 or whatever you're using to land these big fish. So that is an option. I do use them on the spin gear. I used them all year this year on the spin gear, and they're about $40 to roughly give or take where you buy it from, Pat.
It's time for the Flying Gaff and the Flying Gaff.
Nah, stop. That was Red's review.
It was Red's review.
So you're going to stop it there and you're going to say, I don't know. That was Red's review.
That was Red's review.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
On the home stretch now for Real Adventures, it's time for Red's Tip.
Something I didn't mention earlier, and I only got a minute, a harsh minute, so I've already wasted 3 seconds saying that, is when you're landing these fish, these big barrels, make sure that you got your boat positioned correctly with the wind when you're actually going to do the final parts of the job. So just when you start to grab that leader, so what I did, as we come up alongside the fish, I was going down with the wind. I grabbed the leader, and naturally the boat will always fall side on, which you want to be side on with the fish on the wind side, so you're drifting off the fish.
Yep. You don't want the boat to drift over the fish. You do not want it. It has a chance of cutting you off.
Screwed, literally screwed. If to be honest with you, the chances again is very minimal. Especially we had nicer conditions, but that 10 knot wind, even 5-10 knots will push you at a drift. And if that fish takes off, you're done. Where traditionally, if you're drifting away from it, the fish will be out from you, and someone like Nige could get a beautiful gaff shot on the fish. So that, I didn't say it earlier, but that is Red's tip this week. The Flying Gaff, Patrick, I think I'm going to pass this one over to you each week as I do, because it should be going your way.
Yeah, it is. The Flying Gaff this week actually heads to myself. So one of the great features of the North Bank 750 that I've got is it's got a dive door. And the dive door isn't just for diving out of. It makes getting in and out of the boat extremely easy.
Packing the boat.
On the trailer. Everything. Incredible. If you can actually get one on your next boat, we both would highly recommend it. And particularly bringing fish in, it's super easy. You do have to be mindful when you are bringing big fish in off the side of the boat that your flying gaff or your gaff doesn't just rip shreds through your gel coat.
Well, the best part about this is Nige gaffed it, then I gaffed it, and I did everything in my power to not get that gaff near the boat. And Pat goes, I'll lift it in while John Boy was filming. I had a couple of mates come over to film with John. And I don't even know how you've done this, because it wasn't even while the fish was kicking. So how did you do it?
It wasn't my best work. Nevertheless, the flying gaff this week has headed straight into the side of the North Bank. Enjoy your morning if you're fishing on the water. Great to see Victoria out of lockdown. But right around the country, wherever you're going, well, we're going fishing.